LeBron is back. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. In this week's episode, OSU finally installs permanent lights in the Horseshoe. And why are they so late to the game?
But first, singer-songwriter Skylar Gray wrote that twist of her hit song for LeBron James. He's coming back to Ohio. Mm-hmm. Thomas knows that I'm extremely happy about this, and I did have one other song I wanted to dedicate to LeBron. I love you, LeBron. I'm not mad at you. I can't be mad at him. Are you mad at him?
I'm not mad at him. I'm not a Cleveland fan like you, but I'm just excited he's back in Cleveland.
And I knew it. Everyone welcomed him back. 99% of fans welcomed him back.
They did, and there were some people that were senile for the sake of being senile, or bitter for the sake of being bitter because they said they'd be bitter. But I think everyone's excited about it. I think everyone's ecstatic. He's the best player in basketball, and he's in Cleveland.
The funniest part of this is that everyone is totally okay with this because he handled the PR differently.
He did.
There's no really difference between. I mean, there's a big difference, obviously, leaving and coming back, but everyone was mad because of the way he did it, the way it was spun, and no one cares this time.
Even the fans in Miami who are upset that he's leaving, they're like, well, okay, yeah, he's from Ohio, he's going back, he owes them one, he dissed them first.
Miami fans have a giant asterisk by their name.
The nine Miami fans that might not be on the beach right now and not at the clubs. But no, Miami fans are very much, well, that's unfair to say they're very much bandwagon fans, but at a normal Heat game, the arena is quite empty, like, if LeBron is not there. So, yeah, Miami fans are, put an asterisk next to them.
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally okay with saying that. The Cavs look like an immediate contender, top three, top four seed in the East, I think, next year.
Oh, sure, and they're already immediately the favorite to win the NBA Finals next year.
The favorite?
They're the odds-on favorite, according to Vegas bookies, yeah, by far. They get LeBron, they look like they're going to get Kevin Love, maybe. They have Andrew Wiggins. They have one of the best point guards in Kyrie Irving. This is probably one of the top two teams in the East.
They hold the cards with Love. Mm-hmm. They hold all the cards. Minnesota knows they're going to lose him next season. He's not going to re-sign, so they know they need to trade him. I think they keep negotiating a better deal with Minnesota and don't give up Wiggins. Insist on keeping Wiggins.
Yeah, I think that's a good move going forward. Wiggins is one of those freak athletes. He's one of the few guys that has his picture on the cover of Sports Illustrated and ESPN the magazine when he's a high schooler. Another guy I can think of that has his picture on the cover of ESPN and Sports Illustrated with high schooler is LeBron James. So obviously the comparisons probably end there as one of the best players of all time, but Andrew Wiggins is the real deal. I'm coming home, I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming home.
LeBron coming back to Cleveland, obviously a great thing for Cavs fans.
It's also a great thing for the local economy.
Ticket sales, nearby bars and restaurants, parking, LeBron is good for all of it. Mm-hmm. For more on that, we called Mark Niquette. He's a reporter for Bloomberg News. Mark, welcome to After the Score.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Why is a player like LeBron such a boon for the local economy? Help us walk through the steps of why this is such good news for the Northeast Ohio economy.
Well, the county executive in Cuyahoga, Ed Fitzgerald, had a press conference on Monday and started to sort of quantify what the impact of LeBron is for the economy in Cleveland in particular and Northeast Ohio in general. And it sort of starts with, you know, what happens with the Cavs, because you saw a sold-out arena, Quicken Loans Arena, when LeBron played there. And when he left, the ticket sales fell off. It dropped from about 20,500 during his final season in Cleveland per game and down to about 12,000. So the expectation is, and you're already starting to see evidence of that with, you know, season ticket sales, that LeBron coming back to the Cavs will mean a full Quicken Loans Arena. And that means more money from the admissions tax that's charged for people getting there. That means more sales tax in the region. It means more people spending money at restaurants and hotels and so forth. And the county tried to sort of even quantify what some of this impact is. And For example, they talked about the increase in fan spending alone from having a full arena each night, including playoffs now, because you expect with LeBron there, they'll get to the postseason, would increase from like $136 million now to $170 million. So there's a $34 million hit right to the economy directly. They think jobs are going to increase because there'll be need for more people to do parking, security, even at restaurants with cooks and waitresses and so forth. That's another benefit. And it even gets down into kind of the weeds in terms of the benefit, because right now the county is paying it's called the debt service, the payments on the bonds that were used to build Quicken Loans Arena. And part of the admissions tax comes to pay that debt service. And without LeBron there, without as many people attending the games, the county has to dip into its general fund to pay that debt service. And the expectation is with LeBron there, you know, more money goes from the ticket tax to the debt service, and that means more money for the county to spend on parks and roads and any other service they want.
Is Cleveland kind of unique in this way that other big cities, if they were to grab LeBron, like New York or L.A., they already have a booming entertainment district, and their economy does well on its own. Is Cleveland unique in that this is the big grab for Cleveland now?
I think it's probably heightened that way. You're right, because, you know, you could argue that an established market wouldn't see this kind of impact from one player coming to a team like this. But given where Cleveland is, where it's still trying to get to, adding LeBron to the mix, you know, you could just see a lot of tangible and intangible benefits that could mean a big deal, particularly for that downtown area, you know, where the arena is. And, you know, you've seen a lot of things happening in Cleveland. They've been adding more residents downtown. They're trying to grow that sort of restaurant arts district around there. And adding a player that's going to bring that many more people downtown is going to be a big thing for the downtown. There's you know, no two ways about it.
Does a player like LeBron also price out some of the fans? I mean, there's going to be a lot more demand for Cavs tickets, as we talked about, local restaurants. So prices for meals there could go up. Parking prices could go up. This seems like it could push out some of the with all due respect, the lower tier fans, the fans who are just barely able to enter that market.
It could. You're right. That's a good point. And the other thing we have to sort of be aware of, and economists will tell you, that you have to be careful about some of these projections of economic impact, because some of this money is just shifted around, you know, particularly on the entertainment side. So, okay, maybe you have more people coming to Cavs games and spending their money there, but that might not be new money. That might just be money that they otherwise would have spent at the movies or somewhere else, or money from Akron, somebody living in Akron coming to a game and spending the money in Cleveland as opposed to, you know, staying in Akron. Sure, it's going to help Cleveland, but it's not necessarily new money pumped into the local economy in that sense.
Is it possible to have too much economic activity tied to a player? If he leaves again, he left in 2010, if he conceivably leaves again, could it do damage to Cleveland's economy?
Well, you could see the revenues falling, right? And that's essentially what happened, like you said. When LeBron left, you saw the admissions tax go down. That meant less money going to the county and less money going to the city. Other taxes that the city and county collect went down. So sure, you could see a drop just like you did when he left. But I think what they're focusing on now is more the upside potential. And what will be interesting to see is, you know, how much of the economic impact actually delivers. Some of this, you know, you could sort of expect you'll see happen, you know, increased player salaries, you know, will mean more income tax for the city, for example. You can kind of count on that. But they're also talking about a lot of indirect economic benefits that'll be harder to measure and harder to sort of see if it happens. For example, if it sort of boosts the profile of the Cavs and the image of Cleveland, does that attract more businesses or have more people want to live in Cleveland? Does that sort of help improve property values? Some of these more esoteric things that, again, are harder to maybe quantify or pin specifically to LeBron James, but certainly could have an impact.
Mm-hmm. LeBron's scheduled to make about $20, $21 million next year. You could make the argument that he is wildly underpaid.
Right, and I've seen some of those calculations before where if you try and put a price tag on what does LeBron actually mean in terms of what he brings to the table and how many fans he attracts, you know, what does he add to the bottom line of the franchise value, for example, you could certainly make a case that he's underpaid. And that's what was kind of interesting with this whole debate about where should he play and, you know, taking max money and so forth. You know, it would seem like the amount of money he gets paid for his contract is not as important as, you know, maybe what he makes in endorsement deals for himself, but also, like you said, what he brings to the value of the franchise, and like we're talking about, maybe even the economic impact for the city where he plays.
He makes something like $80 or $90 million a year in endorsements alone. So his salary is almost less than a third of the actual amount of money he brings in. We've been talking to Mark Niquette, a reporter with Bloomberg. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
If you asked a longtime college football fan what time a game should start, what do you think they'd say, Thomas?
Well, in the Big Ten, it's noon. If you're lucky, it's a 3:30 start.
Probably not 8 o'clock, right?
It's not 8 o'clock.
That's changing, at least somewhat. Ohio State is trying to have more night games, and this year they will host at least 3 primetime games.
And for the first time ever, Ohio State has taken the action and installed permanent lights in Ohio Stadium. For more, we called Doug LeMaurice of Cleveland.com.
Okay, Doug, so Ohio State is trying to increase efforts to get more night games. Why are night games such a big deal? Why are they considered better?
TV, money, recruiting. I think those are the big three. I don't know that it is a better overall experience for the average fan. If you don't live right in Columbus and the game's going to not, you don't get out of the parking lot until well after midnight and you got to drive home. It's a little nuts. People are used to that in sports now. But I think the main thing is this is what the TV network wants. It just becomes more and more important each year what the TV deal is for the Big Ten. The Big Ten, other leagues have actually been ahead of the Big Ten in playing their biggest games at night. And then Urban Meyer likes it. He likes it for recruiting. I think logistically it's easier for high school kids to get there for a Saturday night game than a Saturday noon start. But mostly this is about getting your product out in an environment where it can make the most money and get the most exposure, and it's what the TV people want.
For the size that Ohio Stadium is this installing of permanent lights overdue? Are other stadiums already long ahead of Ohio State?
Well, I think it tells you something. It matches up with what they're doing when they have 5 night games overall on the schedule for 2014, and they're putting in permanent lights. They're telling you this is not a one-time thing. This is not a fluke. This is clearly a trend. A couple years ago when they were playing really one home night game, and then people would try to make them play at night on the road as much as possible, but really it was one home night game was pretty much the deal. You didn't need lights. It would have been a waste of money. But now this is what it is now, and this is what it will be down the line. And certainly there have been other stadiums that have had lights before this, but I don't think it's overdue. I just think it's telling you what is coming in the future.
I've known night games were better, or at least had more of a kind of a prime time entertainment value since I was probably 6 years old and watched Monday Night Football. Why is OSU and I guess other schools, why are they lagging behind on this?
Why are they
lagging behind on this?
I think the Big Ten, in many, many, many things, is more of a traditional conference. It's more about the culture of the Midwest. It's more about that family feel that you wake up in the morning, you get your tailgate ready, you come out in the afternoon in the lovely fall sunshine, and then, you get home at night. That is what a Saturday college football experience was. And I think to a lot of people, that's still what it is. Night games are great. I think night games are great more as the exception to the rule. I don't know what people are going to think when there are, 7 home games and someday 4 or 5 of them are going to be at night. I don't know if that's really what the average fan wants. But I do think it's a cultural Midwestern family kind of thing where you go play an afternoon football game under the sun. And it's now shifting, but I think that's why it held on the previous one for so long.
It's no secret that Ohio State fans tailgate in large numbers, and having a 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock start game puts more risk for fans being a little bit more intoxicated. Is this a security threat or a problem that the university has thought about?
I'm sure they've considered it. I've always thought that Ohio State is pretty good on that game day stuff, whether it comes to traffic control or parking situations. Obviously, they've sort of gone back and forth over the years. Sometimes they're real strict on open container stuff, and sometimes not as much. I think they are very good at the game day environment, and I'm sure it's something they have to think about. People sort of joke about it. that people have all day to tailgate. I mean, it is a real thing. Because there's still going to be people who are going to wake up in the morning and come, and they're going to get there at 10 a.m. and then just going to do it for 10 hours. So I think there are certainly logistical considerations. You don't just slap lights on top and say we're ready to play three or four night games a year. There's other things to think about, but I do think Ohio State's pretty good at that.
I guess last question for you. Which night games are you looking forward to most this year?
I think the Penn State game on the road will be very interesting. You know, I think that can be a great environment at night, as well as obviously Ohio Stadium can be. And I think the Michigan State game on the road. I mean, really, those are the biggest ones, actually, in my mind. I mean, I think the Cincinnati thing, 6 o'clock start in Ohio Stadium will be good. Virginia Tech will be good. I don't think those games in Ohio Stadium will be quite like what we saw, for instance, with Texas at home. At night, USC at home at night. You know, they've played some pretty good night games. I don't know that we're going to have quite that environment, but I do think to play a November night game in East Lansing between the two best teams in the Big Ten with Ohio State and Michigan State, that's going to be a primetime game. That's a great environment, and it's going to be a game that everybody in the country is going to be paying attention to.
We've been talking about the new permanent lights in Ohio Stadium and how they're part of OSU's effort to have more night games. We've been talking with Doug LeMaurice from Cleveland.com. Doug, thanks as always.
Thanks, guys.
That will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find the show at WOSU.org/AfterTheScore and on iTunes.
You can also listen to all of the show's episodes using the WOSU Public Media mobile app. And you can always find us on Twitter @AfterTheScore. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley.